We are going to finish the book of Samuel three times in the next 3 weeks. And the reason we're going to do that is that there is something happening at the end of 1 Samuel that we need to see all three perspectives on. Okay, and it's the death of Saul. Because there is we have just finished the place where David is anointed king in Israel. And you would think that that's all good news from there. I mean, he's anointed king. He comes to the castle and he calms Saul's tormented spirit. And he goes out and he slays Goliath. And the people are amazed. The people are just thrilled with this guy, David. And you would think that it would just be an easy walk from there. David should go to the throne. David rules Israel. God makes a covenant with him. It looks really good. The first son of David turns out to be Jesus and it's all finished. Well, it doesn't work out that way. In fact, it's a lot worse than that, and it's because of this one guy, Saul. All right, and we're going to take 3 weeks to think about what is the problem with Saul, and this week we're going to look at it from the perspective of who is his son, Jonathan. I mean, we're going to start at the end of 1 Samuel in chapter 31 for those of you who want to follow along today, and really just the first six verses. Now, this is years after the death of Goliath, and the Philistines are still fighting with Israel. And chapter 31 begins, "Now the Philistines fought against Israel, and the men of Israel fled before the Philistines and fell slain on Mount Gilboa. And the Philistines overtook Saul and his sons, and the Philistines struck down Jonathan and Abinadab and Malchishua, the sons of Saul. The battle pressed hard against Saul, and the archers found him, and he was badly wounded by the archers. Then Saul said to his armor-bearer, 'Draw your sword and thrust me through with it, lest these uncircumcised come and thrust me through and mistreat me.' But his armor-bearer would not, for he feared greatly. Then therefore Saul took his own sword and fell upon it. And when his armor-bearer saw that Saul was dead, he also fell upon his sword and died with him. Thus Saul died, and his three sons, and his armor-bearer, and all his men on the same day together." Now this is an interesting story, because when we start 2 Samuel, we're going to see something a little bit different as it's reported for what happened to Saul. But right at the beginning in verse 2, it says, "The Philistines overtook Saul and his sons, and the Philistines struck down Jonathan and Abinadab and Malchishua, the sons of Saul." So the end of Jonathan's life looks like what? I mean, how does Jonathan die there? He's killed by the Philistines. That's a really obvious insight there, Roger. But what does that mean? No, that's good. That's exactly what I'm looking for. This is not a big theological point here. He's killed by the Philistines. But what does that mean practically? Where was Jonathan? He was with his father, okay? That's the first thing we have to recognize, that Jonathan stood next to his father until the end of his life. Now, his father was no prize. We're going to talk more about that next week. But Jonathan stood with his father till the end of his life. So that's the first thing we have to remember. So he stood with his father. But what else was he doing by standing with his father? Who was his father? I mean, in terms of position or authority?
King.
The king. So Jonathan stood with the king of Israel to the end of his life. You know, that he didn't wander off. You know, he wasn't off hiding under some rock someplace or pouting because his father did some bad things, which, again, we will talk about some more in a minute. But Jonathan stood next to the king of Israel to the end of his life. And the last thing I want you to think about, and this is important, and it really branches off of directly what Roger said, but he dies in battle. He doesn't die in retreat. He doesn't die because somebody snuck a knife into him. He doesn't die secretly. He dies publicly, fighting a battle for the sake of Israel and God and the king of Israel. So Jonathan, if we had to just put it in one sentence, Jonathan dies well. Jonathan dies in obedience, the way any man in Israel could assign obedience at that time. Okay, he dies in obedience to God. So if we want to answer our first question, how does Jonathan die? He dies in obedience. Now that's an interesting point of reference, because that only means something if we can talk about his life. How did he spend the rest of his life? If he dies in obedience, how did he live? And we're going to shuffle back a few chapters to find out exactly how that works. We're going to start in chapter 14. So let's start in 1 Samuel 14 and think about Jonathan. Now this is really the first time we hear about Jonathan in the book of 1 Samuel, all right? And we're going to start in verse 1. One day Jonathan, the son of Saul, said to the young man who carried his armor, "Come, let us go over to the Philistine garrison on the other side." Now they're faced up against the Philistines for battle. And Jonathan sees a garrison of them, and he takes one guy with him, and he says, "Let's go see what's going on over at the garrison." Saul was staying at the outskirts of Gibeah in the pomegranate cave at Migron. The people who were with him were about 600 men, including Ahijah, the son of Ahitub. You say those words, Ahitub. Ichabod's brother, son of Phinehas, son of Eli, priest of the Lord of Shiloh, wearing an ephod. And the people did not know that Jonathan had gone. So Jonathan sneaks off. Nobody's backing him up. And we skip ahead to verse 6 here. Jonathan said to the young man who carried his armor, "Come, let us go over to the garrison of these uncircumcised. It may be that the Lord will work for us, for nothing can hinder the Lord from saving by many or by few." Now, this is the introduction we have to who Jonathan is. Now, the first time we meet Jonathan, we don't find out how tall he is or how good-looking he is. We just find out he's the son of Saul. And he and his armor-bearer, as the armies are faced up, go to face a garrison by themselves. And his reasoning is that if the Lord is with us, nobody can stand against us. The Lord can save by many, or he can save by few. And his armor-bearer, it says in verse 7, his armor-bearer said to him, "Do all that is in your heart, do as you wish, for behold, I am with you, heart and soul." So Jonathan makes a plea to the armor bearer and says, "Well, let's go do this thing, and let's do it in the name of the Lord, because if the Lord is with us, it doesn't matter if there are two of us or 2,000 of us." And the armor bearer says, "I'm with you." So they sneak up, and it's kind of I don't want to say it's completely comical, but it's sort of funny, because Jonathan sort of peeks his head over the ridge, and they see him, and they say, "Well, we're gonna go kill these two stupid Israelites who just snuck over here." And Jonathan kind of waves them on. He kind of gives a sword in the air, gives him one of these. And Jonathan said to his armor bearer, this is verse 12, "Come up after me, for the Lord has given them into the hands of Israel." Then Jonathan climbed up on his hands and feet, his armor bearer after them, and they fell before Jonathan. That's the Philistines. And his armor bearer killed them after him. And that first strike which Jonathan and his armor bearer made killed about 20 men within, as it were, a half a furrow's length into an acre of land. And then there was panic in the camp, in the field, and among all the people and the garrison, and even the raiders trembled, and the earth quaked, and it became a very great panic. And in fact, it becomes such a great panic that the Philistines are sort of blindly fighting. They don't even know who their enemy is. And it turns out that the garrison of Philistines kill themselves. They all kill each other, and Jonathan and the armor bearer come back to the camp and give praise to God for a victory that two of them won against a garrison. That's the first thing we see about Jonathan, okay? That he has full confidence in the Lord. He doesn't go there to seek glory for himself. He doesn't really go there to win a victory for his father, although that's a good consequence of this. He goes there in full confidence of the Lord, that the Lord will protect them, whether there are many of them or few. Let's just go ahead then. Let's go to chapter 18. Let's flip ahead to chapter 18. So we've been introduced to Jonathan. We know what his spirit is like. And now David has just won his victory over Goliath. And there are two reactions. The reaction of Saul, which we will talk about next week, and the reaction of Jonathan here, which goes like this. As soon as he had finished speaking to Saul, that's David, the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul. And we jump ahead to verse 3 there. Then Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as his own soul. And Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was on him and gave that to David, and his armor, and even his sword, and his bow, and his belt. Now last week, Bill was here, and he made a comment that, you know, when you give somebody your sword, you're not just giving them something you own. You're making a statement about where your loyalty lies. But Jonathan doesn't just hand over his sword, he hands over his garment. Now, what kind of garment is he going to be wearing? He's the prince. I mean, he's the oldest son of Saul. He's handing over his princely robes to David. He's saying, if we belong together, this is how we belong together. I'm going to give you my princely robe, and I'm going to give you my sword. I'm going to give you all of my loyalty. So given the place, let's ask my question now, given the place in this story where this is described, how does Jonathan's reaction to David compare to Saul's reaction to David? I mean, last week we saw what Saul did. Does anybody remember what that was? Saul calls, as he sees the fight going on and he sees David return from the fight with the head of Goliath, he says, who is that little boy? Why don't you bring him over here by me so I can be seen in public with him? Saul's reaction to David is, what can I get from David? Saul's reaction to David is, how can this benefit me? Jonathan's reaction to David is, here is another man who wants to serve God selflessly. Whatever happens to him, that's what I want to happen to me. I throw myself in with him. I will follow him. I will stick with him. Because whatever God is doing, he's doing with him. David went out, and there was success wherever Saul sent him, so that Saul set him over the men of war. Now, what does Jonathan's reaction tell us about Saul? I want you to think about that. Jonathan can see that David is serving God, and Jonathan throws himself in with David. What does that tell us about Saul's reaction? Think about this. This is a tough question, okay? Because I'm not sure the text tells us immediately.
That he wasn't following God?
Yes, Saul was not following God. Saul was not looking for the things that God looks for in a man. Saul was looking out for something else, and I think it's a hard picture to put together. You know, we've had a lot of talks in the teacher's class before this. We have had a lot of talks about whether or not Saul was really trying to do what was right, what was obedient before God. I think Saul's reaction to David, as it is compared here to Jonathan's reaction to David, makes it very clear that Saul has a problem with those who lead a godly life. Saul has a problem with them. He fears Samuel, and he fears David. So we have to look at Jonathan and say, if Jonathan can behave this way towards David, why can't Saul? All right, our next place we're going to jump ahead to is in chapter 19, and we'll start in verse 1 again. And we're still thinking about this question of how did Jonathan live, okay? As Saul spoke to Jonathan, his son, and to all his servants, that they should kill David. But Jonathan, Saul's son, delighted much in David, and Jonathan told David, Saul, my father, seeks to kill you. Therefore, be on your guard in the morning. Stay in a secret place and hide yourself. And I will go out and stand beside my father in the field where you are, and I will speak to my father about you, and if I learn anything, I will tell you. And Jonathan spoke well of David to Saul, his father, and said to him, let not the king sin against his servant David, because he has not sinned against you, and because his deeds have brought good to you. For he took his life in his hands, and he struck down the Philistine, and the Lord worked a great salvation for Israel. You saw it, and rejoiced. Why then will you sin against innocent blood by killing David without cause? Now what is Jonathan doing there for Saul? What is Jonathan doing for Saul? Yeah, trying to keep him from sinning. How else would you say that? He rebuked him, but in what kind of a way? I mean, was he beating him up?
Giving him a new perspective.
That's right. He was trying to show him the error of his ways. I mean, he's trying to say, listen, David did something good for you, and he did it by the power of God. Why would you want to persecute David? And this is Saul's reaction. And Saul listened to the voice of Jonathan, and Saul swore, as the Lord lives, he shall not be put to death. And Jonathan called David, and Jonathan reported to him all these things, and Jonathan brought David to Saul, and he was in his presence as before. Jonathan is, he is trustworthy to his father. You know, this is a place where if Jonathan were somebody who was trying to look out for who's going to be the next king of Israel, who should be Jonathan, given that Saul is the king, this would be a place where we would be interested to find out if Jonathan is going to act in his own best interest, or if he's going to act in a way which we would call obedience. And Jonathan acts in obedience. He doesn't try to say, well, how can I position Saul and David so that they could kill each other and then I could be king? He doesn't position his father in a place where he can sin himself out of a kingship, where people would revolt against him out of hatred because he acts in such an unjust manner. He seeks to give his father a loving rebuke in order that his father will not sin. Now, this isn't the only time that Jonathan does this. If we hop ahead to verse 20, or chapter 20, I'm sorry, David has to flee again because Saul doesn't keep his word. I mean, he stops persecuting David for a little while, but then continues. Then David fled from Naoth in Ramah and came and said before Jonathan, what have I done? What is my guilt? And what is my sin before your father that he seeks my life? And he said to him, far from it. That's Jonathan speaking to David. You shall not die. Behold, my father does neither great nor small without disclosing it to me. Jonathan says, listen, that's not going to happen. If my father was going to kill you, I would know about it, and I won't let that happen. So skip ahead to verse 24. And David is hiding in a field. And when the new moon came, the king sat down to eat food, and the king sat on his seat, as at other times, on the seat by the wall. And Jonathan sat opposite, and Abner sat by Saul's side, but David's place was empty. Yet Saul did not say anything that day, for he thought, something has happened to him. He is not clean. Surely he's not clean. But on the second day, the day after the new moon, David's place was empty again. And Saul said to Jonathan, his son, why has not the son of Jesse come to the meal either yesterday or today? And Jonathan answered Saul, David earnestly asked of me to go to Bethlehem. And he said, let me go, for our clan holds a sacrifice in the city, and my brother has commanded me to be there. So now, if I have found favor in your eyes, let me get away and see my brothers. For this reason, he has not come to the king's table. Now, Jonathan does tell a lie there. Okay, but he's trying to protect David from Saul's unjust anger. And Saul says in anger then, Saul's anger was kindled against Jonathan. And he said to him, you son of a perverse, rebellious woman, do I not know that you have chosen the son of Jesse to your own shame and to the shame of your mother's nakedness? For as long as the son of Jesse lives on the earth, neither you nor your kingdom shall be established. Now look what Saul appeals to there. Doesn't appeal to obedience to God, doesn't appeal to the law. He appeals to Jonathan's own self-interest, and he says, listen, don't you understand that throwing in with David really writes your own story to the end? You cannot be king as long as the son of Jesse lives. Therefore, Saul says, send and bring him to me, for he shall surely die. And then Jonathan answered Saul, his father, why should he be put to death? What has he done? But Saul hurled his spear at him to strike him. So Jonathan knew that his father was determined to put David to death. So Jonathan goes out and tells David, don't come. Don't come. I cannot change my father's mind. Do not come. Now listen, is that faithfulness to his father? Does he prove trustworthy to his father by doing that? Let's think about that. Rusty, you're nodding your head. What do you think?
I say yes, because he said that he was still trying to keep his father from sinning, shedding innocent blood.
That's good. Jonathan is being trustworthy to his father. Listen, it is wrong for the king to act unjustly. It's wrong. I mean, we are still in Israel. This is still Israel under the covenant. The king has an obligation to be executing justice. And Jonathan is there to make sure that his father, even if he won't actually act justly, he won't actually act unjustly. So Jonathan continues to behave in a trustworthy way towards his father. Now, how does Saul perceive that, though? Yeah, he sees him as a traitor, doesn't he? He sees him as the one who's going to usurp the kingdom from the line of Saul to the line of the son of Jesse. You know, Saul is so, his vision of how things are working out is so corrupted, he can't see that his son is trying to give him trustworthy advice. So let's move on, and we really, that's almost the last time we see Jonathan in the book of Samuel until the end when he gives his life fighting with his father. But let's ask the question, what does the life of Jonathan tell us about the life of Saul? All right? And I want you to think about this. We've got to keep knitting this story back together, okay? Because the whole Old Testament goes together. We do it a lot of injustice when we forget how these books fit together. And we have to remember that the basis for the book of Samuel is the book of Judges. So when we go back to the book of Judges, what's the warning from the book of Judges? Does anybody remember? Well, abide by the law is the short version. Tara, what were you going to say? That's right. The last line of the book of Judges, that phrase that's repeated over again. Every man did what was right in his own sight. And what? At that time, there was no king in Israel. Those two sentences come together as a warning. A warning to whoever is going to be king that it's not about what's right in your own eyes, but that you are going to be king of Israel, where obedience is the tender with which you trade with God. You should obey God. Now, is it possible for us to hear the warning of the book? It is possible. In Jonathan's life, we can see that it is possible to hear the warning of the book of Judges and to do something about it. You know, Jonathan is Saul's son. He could throw in with Saul and say, my dad, really, this is a pretty good thing, being king. It's hard sometimes, but you get over the hard by killing the ones who are in the way, like David. David's in the way. We could kill him, and this could go well for us. But that's not what Jonathan does. Because he is first focused on obedience, and he hears that warning, not to do what is right in your own eyes, but to do what is right in the sight of the Lord, Jonathan behaves in a different way, so it is possible to hear the warning of the book of Judges and do something about it. The king does not have to be like every other man. The king should not be doing what is right in his own eyes. You know, the really sad thing about Saul is that he constantly is manipulating what the law really says to say, I was trying to do what the law says. You know, it's funny how he says in that first incident where he offers the sacrifice, I forced myself to give the sacrifice because you weren't here, Samuel. Samuel just shakes that off. Samuel doesn't try to reason with him. He says, you've done something foolish. You have done something foolish, but Jonathan does not do those foolish things. He seeks to be obedient rather than to offer sacrifices, which God does not want. Next up, this is something else we can tell about the life of Jonathan and the life of Saul. God's intention for Israel are clear if one is inclined to hear them. Following God's will is possible in Saul's lifetime. Okay, if Jonathan is able to follow God in obedience, Saul should have been able to follow God in obedience. What was necessary to follow in obedience was available to Saul. Jonathan followed it, and Saul didn't. Now, why would it be important to know that this is true? I mean, what are we really thinking about here as we think about the king of Israel? We're thinking about Israel itself. You know, the problem with Israel is that it has the covenants. It has all of the books of Moses. It has the ability to read the testimonies and to do what it says in Deuteronomy 6, to read the words that were given to them, to teach them to their children, to talk about them all the time, and to live it, to live that way, to know what it is that God expects from you. All right, Jonathan is able to do that. Saul doesn't. Saul refuses. And the last thing that the life of Jonathan can tell us about the life of Saul is that David is not an enemy of Saul, even though he is anointed to replace him. Now, next week we're going to talk in depth about the end of the life of Saul. All right, but we have to recognize that David is not Saul's enemy. Now, three times, David, rather than put some sort of a hurting on Saul, calls Saul God's anointed one. And who am I that I should put my hand on God's anointed? There are two times when David makes it clear to Saul, I could have killed you. It would have been easy. But I chose to spare you because you are God's anointed. The question here in Jonathan is, why is Jonathan so much different than his father? I mean, what's the matter with Saul? There is something the matter with Saul that we need to... Yeah, it could be pride. What were you going to say about that, Roger? Go ahead.
Well, it seems to me that Jonathan, originally when he talks to David, it's almost like a little prophetic. It's almost that he knows that David is going to be the king someday.
Yes.
He knows that. And he sees what his father does not see, and he's humbled by that. And Saul is not. Saul's just, nobody's taking my place. I mean, he throws a spear at his own kid. I mean, he's neurotic. You know, I mean, he's out there. And yet, it's amazing to me, you go back to the first question, how does Jonathan die? Mm-hmm. He knows his father's done wrong. He knows his father's been a bad leader. But yet, he still dies by his side in battle. It's amazing.
That's exactly right. That is exactly right. And let me put this to you, okay? We're going to think about this again next week as we talk about Saul. But, you know, Saul could have stepped down at any time. Mm-hmm. Saul could have stepped aside. Because it's clear that Saul knows that God has something in store for David. Even if he didn't, hang on one second, Rusty. Even if he did not know that the anointing of Samuel had already taken place, Saul knows that there's something in God's plan for David. He could have stepped aside for David and let somebody say, no, it's not time yet. But he didn't. Instead, he persecuted David out of fear. What were you going to say, Rusty?
It seems to me like that his heart is being hardened each time that he's brought to that place of decision to choose the way of God and Jonathan as he appeals to his father, and he chooses the other way and chooses to persecute David or to try to kill him. His heart becomes harder and harder, and it's getting harder and harder to make that decision to turn back.
Yes. That's it. That's exactly it. You know, I think that is exactly it, is that as he approaches the place where he can say, I could really just choose God's way, and it would actually be an easy way out. Instead, his pride, his guilt, his anxiety, the evil spirit, I mean, the fact that God sends a spirit to torment him several times, you know, those things all come together in Saul, and we find that Saul simply refuses to do what everybody else seems to know is the right thing to do. Now, next week we're going to talk about actually the death of Saul. What happens between David and Saul? Why does it take, you know, 13 chapters of the Bible to transition from the anointing of David to David's ascension to the throne? Why does that take so long? And there's only one answer to that question. Saul. Saul is the reason. And we're going to see how that all plays out next week. Any other questions, comments, thoughts? Anybody want seconds on Jack's breakfast? Jack, we really appreciate it when you cook. You always do a great job. Let's, yes.
I just want to mention, you know, we've talked a lot about David and Saul doing kind of character studies on them and Jonathan. But behind all this is the Lord's working out his purpose too.
Amen.
He chose Saul knowing Saul was going to be this way.
Yes.
He knew the heart. And you know, Jonathan and David stepped back and said, we're not going to strike down God's anointing. Basically, that's God's task. God will take care of it. And God hasn't. And God didn't. David went through all that and didn't, played it out. So you start wondering why. And he was teaching his nation a lesson.
That's exactly right. Gosh, that's good.
Yeah, he was teaching his nation a lesson about who to depend on and what type of person should be king and what type of person you should be. And so he's teaching that lesson to them, and that's why Saul is continuing and nothing happens to him. He wasn't defeated in battle or killed in battle before this time, before it happens.
That's really good, Wayne. You know, that's really why we're going so slowly here, folks. I mean, we really could have probably done all of this talk about Saul, David, Jonathan in about 2 weeks. But it is really important because the Bible spills a lot of ink here on this topic for us to spend some time in saying, why does God let Saul be king as long as he does? In this question of Saul being the king that Israel deserves and David being the king after God's own heart, those are not Sunday school slogans. That is God's lesson here. If Israel were let to be what it wants to be, it would have a king like Saul who does not obey God. But because God has a covenant with Israel, a covenant with Moses, a covenant with Jacob and Isaac and Abraham, because God has a promise that he is fulfilling, he is teaching us what that promise means through these men. That is such a good point, Wayne. Let me ask y'all a question. Five minutes left. Let me ask y'all a question. Was Jonathan blessed by God?
Yes.
That's a quick yes, Roger. Where did Jonathan see the blessings?
Well, I think he saw the blessings in David and what would come. And I'm always amazed by this story that Jonathan sees the big picture, that same picture that's in front of Saul and everybody else that they can't see. I think you go back to the beginning of this book in that God gave the people what they screamed for. Turned out to be real dysfunctional, but he gave them what they screamed for, and that was a king. Just showed them the type of kings. I mean, I can think back in my life, people who have been president of this country, and you look at it and say, gosh, I never want a guy like him to be president again.
So Jonathan received the blessing because his father was a bad king? Is that what you're saying?
No, I think Jonathan received the blessing because he saw that even though his father was a bad king, there was something coming that was going to be better.
Hmm.
I think Jonathan was the blessing to a lot of people. And I think there are a lot of times, even today, that people are the blessing to others rather than are the blessed. I mean, they will be blessed later, but I don't think that we're all blessed. I mean, not outwardly.
You know, I think we would classify as David, this is how we would do it. I mean, this is what seems right in our eyes, that David got the blessing, and Jonathan was a blessing to him. Because even if we look back, if we think about Jonathan, you know, there's that place where he's helping David hide, and he says, listen, when my father dies, you will be the king, and I will be at your right hand. You know, I read that, and I get choked up. Because we know Jonathan isn't going to sit at his right hand. Jonathan's going to die before David gets to be king. But Jonathan sees the blessing in that God has made a promise and is going to keep it. You know, we see it, and I am guilty of this, okay? When I say we, I mean all of us. I mean me. I see the blessing as whether God is going to let me keep doing what I'm doing today. It is hard not to see God's blessing as including my comfort and my security. But Jonathan didn't see it that way. Jonathan saw obedience to God as the blessing. We have to recognize that what the Bible characterizes as blessing is different than what we see about blessing day to day. It's not necessarily being comfortable that makes us blessed. Think about that as we think about Saul next week. Now, we're going to reread all these chapters again through 18 through 31, and then the first chapter of 2 Samuel. That's what we're going to read next week, and we're going to talk about Saul. And we're going to really ask the same questions about Saul that we asked about Jonathan. The first question being, how does Saul die?